Listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Welcome to another edition of the Community Living Show. I'm, of course, Kelly Rayburn. Michael Rubin is away today. On this episode, I'm going to play you some of the episodes that were from the TransLink board meeting that was held on March 30th. That was a week ago before Wednesday. And we're going to play you some clips of all the delegates that were playing on there. And of course, it's been over an hour since most of the delegates have been doing some of the delegations on TransLink. Some of them are on Handy Dart, some of them are on other stuff, but you'll get a chance to hear it. Keep in mind, I used a cell phone on my recording device, on my iPhone. There's a little device that has a little recording device. However, the sound may not be very good because I haven't got a chance to plug into one of those little mixer boards. And of course, the problem is the mixing board doesn't have the equipment with my iPhone on it. So bear with me, and hopefully we will get a chance to listen to all the delegates that was happening on TransLink. Happened on Wednesday, April 30th. Enjoy.
We're going to get to the delegation portion where you get to speak. If you let us know that you're interested in the time that we ask you to do that. And we've had more delegations asked to speak today than we would typically have time for on the commitment that you will get up to 5 minutes to give your presentation. We also are limited, or we try to limit this portion to 1 hour. As I said, we would likely go over that amount of time if everyone spoke and took the allotted time. If you're on our list, we will allow you to be heard even if it goes past the hour. But what I'm going to do now is read the list of names, just so that you have some idea in which order I'll be calling you, and then you come up and keep using this. And if it's your turn, if you come up to the microphone that's at the board table here, we'd appreciate it. This is the list: Murray Thompson, Anita Hoverman, Maria Robinson, Roseanne Shannon, Dan Longhurst, Marty Copeland, Danielle White, Patrick Maxey, Tim Lewis, Isabel Kolick, Cardi Kaur, Angela Fink, and Tyler Felbell. There were three individuals who asked to speak who had spoken at the December meeting, and recognizing that we would not have time in the allotted space, we advised those individuals and indicated that they could come on a kind of a standby basis today, so that if we did get finished, the people on the list that I just read out within an hour, we would allow them to give their presentation as well. So we'll see how it goes, but we will try to limit our time to 5 minutes for each of the individuals who are on the list I just read. So Anita Hoverman.
Thank you for allowing me to speak with you today. I'm Anita Hoverman, I'm CEO of the Surrey Board of Trade, And last fall, I was appointed chair of a grassroots coalition called Light Rail Links Coalition. We're a community coalition that supports light rail transit for communities south of the Fraser. Our coalition represents community groups, neighborhoods, business associations, and business organizations. I want to begin by thanking you for your work on the business case for light rail transit, that's LRT, along the Fraser Highway. This work is crucial to delivering on the transportation priorities identified by the Mayor's Council vision for Metro Vancouver. As you know, we need a more efficient transit system to move people around in Surrey and in Langley. Transit is underfunded south of the Fraser, tragically underfunded south of the Fraser, and has been for a very long time. Now is the time to invest south of the Fraser. As the fastest growing city in British Columbia, Surrey needs a solution that can help shape growth and build and connect our communities. The complete 27 kilometer LRT system is the right solution. LRT is a cost-effective and high-quality form of rapid transit that will link more communities than SkyTrain. The SkyTrain system is focused on moving people in and out of Vancouver. That's not the service that we need to expand south of the Fraser. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to move people from Newton to City Centre, to Guildford, to Fleetwood, to Langley Centre. And that's what LRT can achieve for the smallest investment and greatest return. The complete 27-kilometer LRT system will help build integrated communities, create jobs and business opportunities, and generate millions in federal and provincial tax returns. We know the impact of LRT will have on the development of our communities. We engaged in a survey conducted of 21 developers by the City of Surrey. 72% said that the presence of LRT would influence their decision on whether to invest or develop in Surrey. And 95% said that it is important that rapid transit is implemented in Surrey sooner rather than later. We also know that community supports your LRT vision. According to surveys in 2013 and in 2016, 80% of Surrey residents support LRT, and almost two-thirds say they would use at least one of the proposed LRT lines. Surrey is growing by approximately 1,000 people a month. We're going to be the largest city in British Columbia. We're looking at an innovative transit solution for our city and for the South Fraser region. We now need to look at how we move this project forward. One of the key considerations for realizing this vision is identifying the funding. We have heard support from our provincial government, particularly for the L line portion of the system. They have yet to indicate support for the Fraser Highway portion. As we all know, the federal government is currently looking for shovel-ready and shovel-worthy projects across Canada to commit funding to the near term. And we want Surrey's proposed 27-kilometer LRT system to be one of those projects. To secure formal funding commitments from both the province and the federal government, we need to ensure the project is shovel-ready and shovel-worthy, having a complete business case. To do that, I'm asking you that you prioritize and finish the design work on the Fraser Highway portion of the LRT system. As I mentioned earlier, the proposed LRT system is based on 27 kilometers of transit to not only connect the communities of Surrey, but also those of Langley City and Langley Township. This is a clear reflection of the Mayor's Council vision to connect our communities, an outcome SkyTrain is unable to match. The LRT along the Fraser Highway is an integral piece of that vision and of the system, and it cannot be separated from the rest of the LRT network. To ensure this, again, I reiterate that the design work along Fraser Highway is needed now. Developing the complete 27-kilometer LRT system is critical to the south of the Fraser. It's critical to our future. In addition to being the best-suited rapid transit for our community's long-term plan, it's also the most affordable for the region. You have the ability to hold TransLink staff accountable to the work that is needed to move this project forward. I'm asking you to continue to champion the needs of our region, of Surrey, of Langley, and communities south of the Fraser, and to ensure the work needed to secure this project is completed. I thank you for your time.
Hi, thank you for having me. My name is Maria Robinson. I'm co-chair of the transit team for the Metro Vancouver Alliance. Mr. Desmond, I think you've worked with their sister organization, the Sound Alliance, in King County, over their transit issues there. For those of you who are not aware, the Metro Vancouver Alliance is a broad-based alliance of community groups, labor, faith, and educational organizations across the Lower Mainland. We are made up of over 50 organizations at this point, and we represent almost a quarter million people. We're a little bit over, actually. So TransLink is embarking on a review of its fare structure. My hope is that this will not lead to fare increases, just changes. Fare increases are not going to lead to any more bums in the seats, and people are not going to be happy. We're asking TransLink to work with the Metro Vancouver Alliance on a proposal that will be developed through our listening campaigns. One that will respect the dignity of the residents in this region, one that will be affordable and accessible and allow people the freedom of movement to work, to live, and to play. A proposal that will be a viable option in your review process. Our listing campaign is still unfolding, but here are a few things I do know already from the meetings we've had with our members. This new structure must include Handy Dart. In fact, I urge you to integrate Handy Dart as soon as possible into the regular fare system. I saw that on the list of things that you're working on right now, and I'm glad, because it's unacceptable to make people pay twice just because the Commerce Card payments aren't accepted on Handy Dart, and the Handy Dart fares aren't accepted as transfers on public transit. So you do have people that use Handy Dart exclusively, and then you have people who use buses and SkyTrain exclusively, but there are a large number of people who use both. And for that reason, the payments must be integrated across the system. It's easier on users and it's easier on TransLink. The new fare structure must also include families. The Sunday family passes have been sorely missed by our members. Many of our families now have to choose between a trip out on the weekend to take their kids to the park or to the museum or to see family. It's between that or groceries, clothes, and school supplies. And then we have low-income single parents. They're scraping by and they find themselves in a predicament every day because they need to use transit to get their children to school, to get food from the food bank, take their kids to the doctor. All of those kids have to come on the trip if they're too young to stay home alone. So that's multiple fare payments for every person on that single trip on a single salary. So we need to find a way to accommodate dependents. The Single Mothers Alliance is one of our members, and they've proposed a solution called the Family Bundle Pass. That's something to look into. The new structure must include everyone, regardless of income, ability, or geographical location. I met a man at Carnegie during the referendum campaign last year. He didn't have two nickels to rub together. He found a job, but it was in Langley. So how was he going to afford to get to his job? There weren't enough free fare savers available for him to get there and back during those first 2 weeks before the first paycheck, so he had to turn down the job. And I can't imagine what that decision must be like. So perhaps we also need to think about our alternative payment plans, too, for even better time fares to a living wage. I know that's complex, but it does sound like a nice idealistic dream. And then there's the distance issue. So considering the cost of housing in this region, my personal opinion is that people have to commute long distances because they've been forced to move further and further away from their jobs and their families and their communities. They shouldn't be penalized for that. A trip is a trip and should cost as much. They don't actually know what role distance should play in the end run in this new fare structure. We'll have to see what our members say and what kind of plans we end up developing. But I don't want to get caught up in this rhetoric of who's subsidizing whose trip. I don't think that's fair. Every trip is equally valid and should not be judged against others. So we need to remember that we each have our own circumstances. We all make compromises and end up where we do for various reasons. Movement across this region is a right. and we need a fair structure that will make it accessible and affordable to everyone, everyone who uses it. So work with us, be open to our proposals, and recognize that this is an opportunity for true community relationship building. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Maria. Your time is perfect. I hope Gigi's keeping a clock running here for me, so thank you very much.
Hi, Maria.
Who's that?
Yes, show them the house.
I come today as a Handy Art client, a representative of the Handy Art Writers Alliance, and a taxpayer who has worked in healthcare for over 29 years. I'd like to tell you what's broken within the Handy Art system, in my opinion, and propose a solution. Let's start with what's broken. This service has been contracted out to an American-based company, one whose sole purpose is to make money. Well, I can only assume that in order to make money, they need to reduce their bottom line. So they're handed millions of dollars and told to run the system. They don't need to pay for office space, supplies, or equipment. They don't pay for the buses. They don't pay for insurance, and they don't pay for the fuel. MBT pays the employees. In order to make money, they manipulate statistics. They make ridership appear lower than it is. Lower ridership means less buses required. Stats are manipulated in the following way. Rides denied have become unaccommodated, waitlist requests, or client refusals. A client refusal occurs when a client is offered a ride in one direction only and told Handy Art can't find a bus for the other leg of the journey. The client is still asked if they'd like to have that ride. Not surprisingly, the answer is no, turning a trip denial into a client refusal. Can we talk about the taxi pilot project? You people took 10,000 service hours and assigned those hours to taxis. This allowed the contractor to eliminate 28 full-time positions. Taxis whose drivers are supposedly trained to deal with Handy Art clients, yet their training amounts to a couple of hours on a one-time-only basis. They are not held to the same standards as Handy Art drivers, resulting in numerous complaints and safety issues. I personally have ridden a taxi once in a scooter, which I used to have to use. This occurred on Monday, February the 18th, 2013. The taxi arrived at Royal Columbian Hospital, which is where I work. The driver loaded me into the taxi, slammed the back gate, and climbed into the seat, where he looked at me in the rearview mirror and said, "Your tires are in the way. Don't worry, I'll drive carefully." And away we went. No seatbelt. No safety device of any sort. Over the Patella Bridge. I was dumbstruck. Handy Art's customer service was already closed, but you can believe that I called them to let them know that I would never allow them to put me in that situation again. As a result, a no taxi note was placed on my file, and I was made aware that because I was a no taxi, my ride pickup times could not be guaranteed, and I might be required to wait beyond the regular 30-minute pickup window. In essence, my concern for my own safety resulted in the possibility of being penalized and forced to wait an undetermined amount of time. How can we fix this? You can start by admitting that the taxi pilot project has failed. Taxi drivers are in the business of making money. They transport people who open their own doors, seat themselves, and they drive away. They get to their destination, they pay their fare, and they get out, allowing the driver to move on. Taxi drivers are not prepared for clients who require assistance, clients who have a variety of mobility devices. I'm asking you to reinstate the 10,000 service hours back into Handy Art. Client safety is at risk as long as you maintain blind faith that this project is working. Secondly, you need to stop contracting out this service. As a taxpayer, I am particularly disturbed. My tax dollars are being handed over to a company whose sole purpose is to take my money out of this country. MBT is essentially siphoning my tax money straight to Texas, and it's time that stopped. Contracting out privatizing public service does not work. Trust me, I've worked in healthcare a long time, and I've witnessed the results. I'd also like to know why there is no Handy Art client represented on the TransLink board. Who better to provide an accurate opinion of the needs of the HandyGuard client than someone like myself, who's required to use the system a minimum of 5 days a week, going to and from work, attending AquaFit yoga, doctor's appointments, and family functions when I can get a ride. Getting a ride involves being on the phone at 1 minute prior to the time that the booking agent's open, and making sure that you hit that button exactly when it rolls over to either 8 a.m. during the week or 8:30 on the weekend. If I'm lucky, I'm one of the first 7 or 8 callers, and I'm almost always able to get a ride or at least something close to the time that I want to be in work. Otherwise, I have waited. I'm the 23rd, 24th person in line, and my rides are unaccommodated waitlist. On to the solution. Who can run our paratransit system in the Lower Mainland? The obvious solution is for TransLink to take the system in-house. HandyGuard has been made top-heavy with management, which would no longer be required if you bring the service in. We need the system to be run by people who are not looking to make a buck to the detriment of the people who require this service. Again, I state, HandyGuard must be brought in-house. This board works for the public. Let's restore accountability to the public, which will in turn restore public faith in TransLink. I understand Kevin Desmond on February 10th of this year stated he will work to restore public transit with public trust and confidence in the Lower Mainland mass transit system. Let's make that happen. May I remind you, there is also an election coming. As a member of the HRA, I speak to you on behalf of every single HandyDart rider. This board works for all of us, and our voices will be heard, whether that is now or in May 2017. This is not rocket science. Last time I checked, HandyDart did not take clients to the moon. Thank you for your time.
Okay, for those are some of the delegates that you just heard on the delegates that was happening on March 30th on the meeting out near New Westminster. We're going to take a break in a moment, and we're going to come right back with more delegates in a moment. You're tuned in to the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks and our flagship station, CITR 101.9 FM. We'll be back in a moment.
Offering the opportunity to learn about film and cultural perspectives from around the world, Reel to Reel Festival includes international family-friendly films and hands-on workshops. Running from April 8th to 15th, R2R has films, activities, behind the scenes, and more. Don't miss Sunday Fun Day. Spend the day watching and making animation. R2R is sure to delight, move, and amaze audiences of all ages. Check out r2rfestival.org for all the information.
To understand more about fashion, we asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
It's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism as opposed to someone who buys, like, you know. Let's say, you know, someone buys a
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Well, actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture, and that's been around for centuries.
Welcome back to the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks and on CITR 101.9 FM, our full hour show. I'm Kelly Rayburn. Of course, we're talking about TransLink and the delegations that was happening on Wednesday, March 30th. So we're going to go back to the delegations right now.
Here today, I'm going to talk to you about contracting out and as opposed to in-house, how it works and what the problems are. Now, back in 08, you signed a contract with an outside provider to provide the HandyDart service. Now, what it did was create a
situation where that provider needs to make profit. There's two things that he worries about. One is his client, which is you, the transit board. The other one is money. Okay, so the only way you can do that in this service is reduce the service. You can call it streamlining, whatever you want, but he reduced the service. So we move on past the strike we had. I start hearing from clients because I'm a driver. I also sit on the executive board of the Amalgamated Transit Union, Local 1724. I represent the office staff, the drivers, and maintenance. So I know what's happening all over the place. So when I hear from clients that they're not getting a ride day after day, I'm a driver. I know there's something wrong. So what I did the FOI information for anybody that doesn't know what that is. It's freedom of information. Right out of your files. Right out of your files. Refusals and denials through the roof. Through the roof. Because of this service provider you have. The service needs to go in-house. So moving forward, what happens? We come up with a special little name called unaccommodated standbys to take some of the pain out of denials. Unaccommodated standby is a denial. So you take refusals, denials, unaccommodated standby. Again, through the roof. So what do we do moving forward? Now we take 10,000 service hours out of the handicapped bus system, put them into the taxi pilot project. The company eliminates 28 full-time runs. That's the equivalent of 55,000 service hours. But wait. You put 10,000 into the taxis, so we're only losing 45,000 service hours. Again, doesn't work. Moving forward, what do we do now? TransLink puts $1 million into taxis. Still it's not working. Let's change the window. Now we got an hour on each side of the window. Ridiculous. For seniors, you can't do that to them. And that's what you're doing. So we move forward. Let's move right up to 2015. How many service hours does anybody here know? How many service hours was the contractor supposed to supply for 2015? Does anybody here know that? Anybody? I do. It's 598,000. Now remember the 45,000 hours that are gone because they eliminated those jobs? Well, in 2015, they put up 553 service hours. That's what they completed. You add the 45,000 service hours. That's their contracted amount of hours. That 45,000 service hours is profit in their pockets. That means people are on the side of the road. Does anybody know how many refusal, denials, and unaccommodated standbys there were for 2015? Anybody? Over 30,000. It's not working. You need to bring the service in-house. One of the benefits in-house, your system now is convoluted. You have TransLink, Access Transit, the contractor, and then HandyDart. Move Access Transit to their administration duties. That's what they should be doing. Remove the contractor. The unions put together a business plan with a management structure and everything else. You can have an advisory committee with stakeholders on that board. Now it's TransLink and HandyDart. You have problems? We can help you solve them. What that's going to create, if you bring it in-house, you can put that money back into the service. The other problem you have with a contractor, you're giving them 2.9% per year. That's $1 million a year for nothing. Do we just bail that to Texas? Yeah. What's that for? This is taxpayers' money. We're talking millions of dollars. Just think of how you can expand the service. Nobody's going to wait anymore. The reason I know about this is because I pick these people up every day. I see the pain and the hurt they go through. I see the employees, the pain, they have to deal with this. You people have to understand this. This is a real issue. It's going to get bigger. It's not going to go away. Nothing's going to go away at all. You put that money back into the service, bring it in-house, make it a wholly owned subsidiary of TransLink. That's what you need to do. What that's going to do is create transparency, and it's going to increase the public trust. And I can prove everything with the FOI. You all know that. So, anyway, thank you for your time.
Danielle White. Does anyone know if she's here or on route?
Yeah.
Patrick Maxey.
Hey, Patrick.
My name is Patrick Maxian. I've been a retired teacher for 10 years. I've raised 7 kids, 6 grandchildren. I've worked with special needs students at Templeton High School. I was the department head at Templeton High School, so I know lots about special needs and individuals with handicaps. Handy Dart has given me a rich, full life after severe arthritis, put me in a power chair 5 years ago, and I thank you for it, okay? I've got nothing, it's given me a new life, is all I can say. I use Handy Dart daily to and from all medical appointments, physiotherapy, exercise programs, both within the city of Port Coquitlam, but in other communities, Burnaby, Coquitlam, Port Moody, Maple Ridge, New Westminster, Vancouver, and Richmond. Now, I've got hours and hours here of things I'd like to say, but I want to get to my main topic. My main topic is the substitution of taxi rides for Handy Dart rides. I'd like to read the experience of one Handy Dart customer who was in a taxi. She gave me this information. It's in small print, but I would like to read it in full so you, everything, all of the concerns that she has in here are concerns that I had and I have in my presentation as well. So there may be a little bit of repetition. Okay, so this is happened in last August. And I'm just going to read what she wrote here. It's in her language, so hopefully you'll be okay with it. I was waiting for a Handy Dart to pick me up at the UBC Dental Clinic. A Handy Dart arrived. The driver dropped off a passenger, so I asked if he was picking me up. He said no. The bus was empty. Small thing. This happens frequently with Handy Dart riders, where we are supposed to be picked up. A Handy Dart will come by, drop somebody else off, and then take off, and you're still waiting. Okay. He said no, the bus was empty. A taxi came. The driver sat in the cab for a few minutes. He comes into the building, saying something to me that I didn't understand because it was in his language. Then I realized he was talking to his earpiece. Then he says, Port Moody to me, still talking in his earpiece. He buckled my right front wheel only, no seat belt either, and still talking on his earpiece. The radio was very loud in his language. I tried to talk to him, but he was still arguing and yelling on his cell. About 15 minutes, he made a sharp turn that myself and the power chair moved violently. I was scared. I was so scared that my bladder leaked. Embarrassed, I tried to get his attention to no avail. My blood gauze that was in my mouth because I had had a tooth extracted started dripping down my chest onto my scarf and jacket because I clenched my teeth so hard in the turn. He answered 4 more calls during the trip and never stopped. I tried to get his attention, nothing. My jaw was still sore, especially where my tooth had been extracted. So there she is, blood dripping from her mouth, sitting in her pee, in a taxi. This would never happen on a Handy Dart. I want you to know right now, if I have to go to the bathroom, they will stop that Handy Dart and let me out and help me into a place to go to the bathroom. I wouldn't be left in the back of a taxi hoping that they would hear me. Anyways, finally I got home. I told him that he was driving unsafe and my chair wasn't tied down properly and was moving dangerously. Also, no seatbelt. He said my chair doesn't have hooks for it. I also commented that he was arguing very loud and talking into his earpiece the whole time with the music blaring. Very unprofessional. His excuse was, I was talking to my wife. Then he didn't open the door to let me out or go to the gate to let me into my apartment. Of all the bad experiences with the taxi drivers, this was the worst. I've had many similar taxi experiences. I've never been belted in a taxi. They've never put a strap on me in a taxi. Sometimes my power chair is not secured, both front and back, and moves around in the back of the taxi. I have to hold on to both sides of the taxi to stay stable in the taxi. I end up, because of my arthritis, straining my joints. I feel like I've been wrestling with somebody when I get out of the taxi. Never has a taxi driver accompanied me to the door of any facility or of my home. One of my worst experiences was when the taxi driver pushed my chair unnecessarily, since it's a power chair, up the taxi ramp, hoping to speed up my loading, and I hit my head on the top of the door frame. I ended up with a lump on the top of my head before I could go into the swimming class that I was supposed to take. Several times I've been left in the back of a taxi for many minutes while the taxi driver is talking on his phone. Handy darts never do that. Handy dart drivers never do this kind of stuff. Frequently, the taxi drivers will take the longest route to and from places because they make more money. One of the most disgusting experiences I have had was when I realized that the black balls rolling around on the floor around my power chair wheels were loose rodent poops. So this isn't a taxi. You don't get this with a handy dart. Taxi drivers do not have the patience, the skill, the incentive, the motivation, or the work stability to substitute for a trained handy dart driver. It's that simple. You people have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to train these handy dart drivers, to give them refresher courses. They know everything. This is a skilled resource for you. Don't throw it away to some taxi companies that don't really care about us. They look at and treat us like second-class citizens when we're in a taxi. In conclusion, handy darts developed and trained an outstanding group of handy dart drivers having special needs. Because I'm a special needs teacher and have that background, I can see how they interact with the populations that these drivers are dealing with. We have adult handicapped, special needs adults that are in their 30s and 40s going to different schools, different workstations. You have a whole bunch of seniors using the service. Most of them are single older women. There are very few men that get on this unless they're in a chair like myself. And if they are men, for the most part, they're being directed on by their wives because they've got dementia or there's some other problem like that. So this service really is a female service. It's a service that helps senior females. I hate to say that, I don't want to get into trouble, but 70% of the people that I see on the handy dart, 70-80, are older women. Okay. TransLink drivers are a rare breed, a highly skilled and trained group of people who consistently exhibit thoughtful, caring, kindly demeanor in a varied and sometimes challenging group of handicapped individuals and seniors. Now, just to go through what they go through, they get out of their buses to help us from our homes. They go to our doors and knock. They hold the doors open. Then they hold our hands to steady us, watching the ground as we move our canes and our walkers and our scooters and our power chairs down the walkways. They help us into the bus. They pull down the steps to let us into the bus. They help us get into our seats. They pull down the seat belts and make sure we're secured. They lower the lifts for our chairs and scooters and walkers, and they monitor us while the lift loads us back into the bus. The drivers don't rush us. They talk reassuringly. They lock the chairs and the scooters into place, securing all four wheels, and then they put a belt across your chest so you're not going to move. In fact, one of the problems I brought up several times is the bus tips over and I'm in there and it's a pond. I keep thinking I'm drowned in the pond because I get out of this thing to be able to do that. Anyway, that was just my own little fear. Anyway, the process really takes about 10 minutes. Taxi drivers, they don't do this. They don't care because we are just seen as a cheap fare who won't and can't complain. We truly are made to feel like second-class citizens in taxis. So in conclusion, you should cherish our drivers who have become our friends and allies and know that despite the criticisms leveled at Handy Dart, one thing you got right are your Handy Dart drivers. Okay, and don't fritter away that resource. Now, I've been asked to give one more quote here. The quote is from, in the new year, I intend to reach out even more frankly. I hope we get more comments and more understanding and listen to what they are saying and figure out how to adjust the system to more adequately and accurately and humanely meet their needs. And anyone who recognizes this? This is from Barry Forbes, the outgoing TransLink chair, December 9th, 2015. So there is an opening. There is an opening. Anyways, you've got your mandate. I agree with everything else the speaker says, and I just want to tell you that the handy jar dryers are a resource, and not to fritter them away, not to treat them badly, get them over A.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much, guys.
Tim Lewis.
Good afternoon, it's a beautiful day out there. I hear a rumor your CEO is delivering great weather, and thank you very much to your new CEO. I want to start off on a positive note as a segue into a very quick recommendation. We were, a number of us, as head of the speaker today at 11 a.m., about 10 days ago, the speakers were moved, to 9 a.m. That would have been a bit of a problem for folks taking handiwork, outside municipalities, would have been leaving our homes at about 7 a.m. For folks that are a bit slower getting up in the morning, that might have been starting to get up at about 5 a.m. For folks that need a helper to come into their home, the helper would have left his home before public transit even starts operating in the morning. I had a very quick, very productive, very positive chat with one of your great employees, Sarah. I apologize, I don't remember her last name. She didn't offer to do what she couldn't guarantee, but did say she'd get back to me, which she did. 90 minutes later, problem solved, back to 11 a.m. I would like to use that as a segue. Let's move away from problem identifying to problem solving. Now we at the U raise service levels for handiwork. But if that's our request, period, we're not being very helpful to you because your hands are tied. Your funding envelope is limited. Your funding sources are finite. You've gone to a referendum and you weren't able to get the support you needed for another funding source. If we just ask you to increase our funding and you do that at the expense of the other members of the TransLink family, crowding those out, Coast Mountain, CBUS, etc., we're not being very helpful. So we believe that we have a solution today that at the very least is worth you wearing your due diligence hat of pursuing. And that's bringing in else. You're spending right now tens of millions of dollars a year on a private, for-profit, American corporation. We would all agree without access to their books that they're making a profit. That's what a private corporation does. Maybe nothing wrong with that. But the fact of the matter is, to make that profit, they're delivering it, and it costs less than what you're paying them. If you delivered HandyDart, say we deliver public transit through a wholly owned subsidiary, Coast Mountain for public transit. If you delivered it at the same cost that the current operator is delivering that, and then you'd have a profit. You could use that profit to raise service levels at no cost to the taxpayer. Now, it would not be realistic for us to say, take our word for it, your wholly owned subsidiary would deliver it at a cost that would leave over a profit. That would be foolish. So here's our recommendation to you today, and we hope today you'll pass a motion regarding this recommendation. If you were to conduct a public sector comparator, the public sector comparator would indicate whether or not our recommendation is feasible and realistic. So we're hoping today, not that you would necessarily pass a motion to conduct a public sector comparator, but at the very least you would pass a motion to ask staff to report back ABC the cost of a public sector comparator, a timeline for a public sector comparator, and the pros and cons of doing a public sector comparator. for the short time frame, a month. A month from now, you can make an informed decision. Yes, you'll do a public sector comparator, or no, you won't. Second recommendation, and I don't see a clock, so I'm not sure how much of my 5 minutes I'll let
you tell you twice.
Okay, I'll be very fast. Even if the public sector comparator recommends bring it in-house, you would not know if they do that, whether or not everything would work out well. So I would suggest that you still consider entering an RFP. Create your own wholly owned subsidiary, and it would submit a bid to your procurement department. Build the Chinese wall between the wholly owned subsidiary and the procurement department. Your wholly owned subsidiary would either win the bid on its merits, or it wouldn't. The very worst that might happen, NBC might get it again, but at a lower cost, because it would know if it's competing against your wholly owned subsidiary. Third and final recommendation. You have a great RFP. I've seen it. It has literally dozens of criteria, and each criteria is given a certain weight. One of the criteria that the RFP does not include is meaningful input feedback from workers, employees, and users. Why not ask your procurement department to add one element to the RFP so that anybody that bids has to indicate in that bid how they will create meaningful input from workers and users. You know, the car industry in the States set aside a certain number of board positions for the workers. If GM can do that, then so can a handicapped operator. I want to thank you very much for your time. I hope the meeting wraps up quick and you get us that sunshine that your CEO apparently is doing there. Thank you very much.
It was interesting to hear Tim Lewis available at the delegations on TransLink. Good on Tim to speak in on his voice. We're hoping to have him on again soon on the Community Living Show in the near future. And of course, on our television, Access Television in the near future. We're going to take a break right now. We're just going over time to our 20-minute limit. So we're going to take a break and we'll be back in a moment with more delegates on TransLink on the Community Living Show.
Show your love for Discorder Magazine at our fundraiser at the ANSA Club on Saturday, April 23rd. We've got one epic night planned with performances by Frog Eyes, Weird Candle, The Backhomes, Malcolm Jack, and Experience This, with special guest DJs and MCs to keep you dancing. There will also be a silent auction and a sale of exclusive back issues of Discorder magazine from the 1980s to now, with all proceeds supporting the publication and printing costs of your free, independent Discorder magazine. Tickets are $10 for CITR members, $15 in advance on brownpapertickets.com, or $18 at the door. Head over to discorder.ca for all the information.
He's a nasty, nasty guy. He's a liar.
Get him out of here. Get him the hell out of here. Get him out of here.
Who is this guy? Does he have a name? Let me know where he's from.
They call me
DJ Ray.
The late night show is the start of the weekend. We play all sorts of drum and bass, D&B, jungle for the first part of the show. On the second part of the late night show, we play lots of ambient sounds or any irritating type of noise that goes bump in the night or any type of new age music that you hear on other stations, only it's better here on CITR. Or any other case for that matter, if you're out and about and you want to hear something that is really groovy and stuff, then check out the late night show here on CITR. CITR 101.9 FM or streaming us online at CITR.ca. We broadcast right about after Friday night, Saturday mornings at 12:30 in the morning, just right after the Medicine Show, hosted by Jason Lawrence. You can email me on request or any drum and bass you like to hear, or any local D&D. If you are a drum and bass person that you want to share on the radio or on CITR, the email address is CITRLateNightShow@gmail.com.
This concludes our proposal. Thank you for your attention.
He's a nasty, nasty guy. He's a liar.
Get him out of here. Get him the hell out of here. Get him out of here.
Who is this guy? Does he have a name? Let me know where he's from.
They call me
DJ Ray.
The late night show is the start of the weekend. We play all sorts of drum and bass, D&B, jungle for the first part of the show. On the second part of the late night show, we play lots of ambient sounds or any irritating type of noise that goes bump in the night or any type of new age music that you hear on other stations. Only it's better here on CITR. Or any other case for that matter. If you're out and about and you want to hear something that is really groovy and stuff, then check out the late night show here on CITR 101.9 FM or streaming us online at CITR.ca. We broadcast right about after Friday night, Saturday mornings at 12:30 in the morning, just right after the Medicine Show hosted by Jason Lawrence. You can email me on request or any drum and bass you like to hear, or any local D&B. If you are a drum and bass person that you want to share on the radio or on CITR, the email address is CITRLateNightShow@gmail.com.
This concludes our proposal. Thank you for your attention.
My name is Isabel Kolick. I'm the executive director of the Heights Merchants Association, a business improvement area in Burnaby on Hastings Street between Boundary and Gamma Avenue. By way of introduction, here's some information about our district. We're a designated urban village, a main street-style shopping area with almost 350 businesses, similar in number to some of our region's larger shopping malls. Our businesses generate at least $127 million per year for our local economy and create more than 2,000 local full-time and part-time jobs in a wide pay range. 60% of our customers come to us for short shopping trips such as groceries and daily services requiring quickly and easily accessed parking. Today I want to talk to you about the HOV line that runs through this community shopping district. Those who commute along Hastings Street see the HOV lane as a benign transportation policy that helps commuters. However, since the lane opened in 1996, it's had a negative impact on our community while having questionable benefits or even questionable necessity. We at the HMA believe that HOV lanes belong on a freeway, or at the very least in a non-commercial traffic corridor that are not dependent on healthy, pleasant, and safe pedestrian environment. We argue that Hastings Street as a whole does not even need an HOV lane, particularly with the Evergreen Line being close to completion and traffic volume on Hastings having significantly declined. Our merchants are concerned about loss of business and the loss of up to 53% of prime Hastings Street parking, in particular during what used to be their peak business hours of the day, that is, the commute home time. And Heights residents, too, wish to see pedestrian friendliness issues addressed. In addition to taking away half of our Hastings Street parking, a moving lane of traffic next to the curb also creates a lot of other problems. High noise levels, equivalent to factory machinery levels, exhaust pollution next to pedestrians, debris, and on rainy days, water spraying from the curb onto the sidewalk. The biggest problem is of danger from rapidly moving vehicles right next to where people walk. Times are changing. The pedestrian is being prioritized. We believe that TransLink's board of directors, like more and more members of the public, wish to encourage people to travel lesser distances by shopping closer to home and to help our region's neighborhood districts be more pedestrian friendly. This, in turn, would help those businesses prosper and create more local jobs, which, in turn, would reduce regional commuting. Finally, we know that TransLink wants to encourage more people to use public transit, like Evergreen Line, not their cars, for regional commutes. The HOV lane also has far fewer legitimate users than one might think. Up to 38% of HOV lane users are cheaters, using the HOV lane with only one person in the car. Based on extensive counts, the number of vehicles in the HOV lane range from 294 to 682 vehicles per HOV period. However, excluding the cheaters, the numbers are much lower than that. Another important factor for our request at this time is that traffic pressure on Hastings Street has declined a lot since the HOV lane was first put in place, by as much as 25%. In the 1990s, the vehicle count was closer to 44,000 vehicles a day. Last year, in 2015, vehicle counts ranged between 25,000 and 34,000 vehicles per day. This is significantly less than 1996 traffic volume. We believe some of the reasons for this include the West Coast Express, the Millennium Line, and Highway 1 expansion. The Evergreen Line is projected to take 40,000 cars off the road in the Tri-Cities area. So with the Evergreen Line running, pressure on Hastings will ease even more. So this is an excellent time to make changes on Hastings Street. If we time it with the Evergreen Line opening, there could be potentially very minimal impact on private vehicle drivers and public transit users. And just like TransLink, the HMA does want to protect public transit on Hastings Street, and we certainly want to protect our neighborhood resident side streets from rat runners, and that's why we're proposing making changes that are timed with Evergreen Line opening. The HMA, the Heights Merchants Association, doesn't want a moving lane of traffic next to our curb and sidewalk any longer. We want our peak business prime parking back and pedestrian-friendly policy in place, and we respectfully ask TransLink to support us in achieving this vision. The BC Ministry of Transportation informed the HMA that the City of Burnaby is the one that has jurisdiction over Hastings Street, and the City has indicated to us that they support in principle the exploration of alternative approaches. But even so, we do need TransLink's cooperation and blessing to move ahead in a new direction. A good start would be to initiate a review of the situation and consider seriously our request today. Thank you so much for your time and attention.
Well, I didn't get all of the delegations that was held over on March 30th, but I got some really good, interesting information that was from the people and from TransLink, especially from the Handy Dart. And of course, Handy Dart service isn't over yet about their services and their problems, including the taxi rides as well through Handy Dart people. That is it for edition of the Community Living Show. We will be back again next week, same time, same station. Of course, tune in tomorrow for the half-hour show on Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. Hopefully, Michael will be back again. I'm counting on Michael to come back. Well, he's not feeling well, so if he's listening to our to us. Hey, Michael, and big shout-out to him anyways. Anyways, we will be back, and we'll see you again soon. Take care, everybody.
And she spends her last dollar on a bottle of vodka for tonight. And I guess it struck a nerve, like I had this in my eyes. You can never get out of the line of sight, like a barren winter day, or a patch of unburned green, like a tragic real dream. I guess it struck a nerve. Every day I wonder if naked a disposition as I'm bombarded by superlatives, realizing very well that I am not alone. Introverted, I look to tomorrow for salvation, but I'm thinking altruistic.
lately. And all